My name is Susan. I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank you all for coming, attending the conference. It's been quite a weekend. I've certainly enjoyed myself. I hope you all have too. Our spiritual speaker this morning is Andrew G. Andrew and I have become good close friends this last year or so. Andrew also was gracious enough to donate the floral arrangements that you see up here for the conference. I first got to know Andrew when a very dear friend of ours became very ill. And we were able to share a very spiritual experience with our friend. And as a result of that, we've been able to come closer and be more to one another, to enjoy each other's company and do all kinds of fun things. That spiritual experience has changed my life, and I think it's probably changed Andrew's too. Because of that, because of our experience, I thought Andrew would be a great person to lead us off into the next year of the conference. So with that, I give you Andrew.
Good morning. I am Andrew, and I'm a very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And spiritually, for me, seeing this many old drunks and at this early in a room on a Sunday morning is pretty amazing. I'd like to welcome anybody that's new. And the great truth about Alcoholics Anonymous is that. And if you don't hear anything else over the weekend, you don't remember anything else, please remember this. The great truth about Alcoholics Anonymous is that we never, ever have to drink again in our life, one day at a time. And we never have to feel the way that we felt when we walked through the door for the first time again. I know how I felt when I came in, and I don't ever want to feel that way again. Susie asked me to do this about 6 or 7 months ago, and I told her I would be more than happy to, and I didn't think it would come up this quick. It was here before I knew it. You know, just a little bit about myself. Driving over here this morning was kind of giving me a chance to look back on my life. I grew up not very far from here. And in fact, there used to be a liquor store in this complex right here on the corner called Sierra Liquor. And I used to buy liquor there, and the gentleman that ran it, I bought so much booze there that he would give me a discount. When I'd go there, I'd buy like a case at a time. And so it brought back a lot of memories. I did a lot of drinking in this neighborhood, and up the street used to be a bar. I don't remember the name of it. It had a couple names, and Dan W. was one of the bartenders there, and used to pour me drinks. And we were talking the other night, Friday night, and the worse Dan looked, the better the drinks were. So it's brought back a lot of memories, and I come from my family's from the South, and they're Irish Catholic, and so we were always concerned about what the neighbors thought, and then we felt guilty about it. Because we were Irish Catholic. I remember my grandmother one time telling me that I needed to go apologize to someone, and it was for something I didn't feel that I was fault at. And I said, "Well, Grandma, why do I have to apologize then?" And she said, "Because you're Southern and it's the proper thing to do." So that's the way I was raised. We were always worried about what the neighbors thought, and everything looked really good. You know, the lawn was manicured. The house always looked good. There was always a nice car in the driveway. And my parents, they didn't drink. But there was, I had come in my recovery to find out that there was a lot of the isms with my parents, and there still is. They just don't drink the booze. I'm the oldest of three. I have two sisters that are younger, and neither one of them drink. They're both pretty normal. I started drinking when I was about 14, 15 years old, and I still remember the first thing I ever drank. It was Gallo Pink Chablis and with one of the twist-off tops. And I blacked out the first time I drank, and I liked it. I didn't feel who I was. I did things that I didn't remember, and I kind of enjoyed that. I enjoyed hearing the stories about what I did, and that's the way I drank for many more years. I drank to black out, and I never understood my friends once saying, let's go get a buzz. You know, I didn't want the buzz. I wanted to black out. I wanted to medicate myself. I didn't want to think about who I was and how much I disliked myself. So I drank like that for years, through high school and after high school and into college. There was a group of us when I went to college that every day after school we would converge on this little restaurant in San Francisco called Joe Jones. It was on the corner of Larkin and Sutter Street. And we'd sit in there from about 2 in the afternoon until about 6 o'clock in the evening drinking. And then the scary part was that then I'd get in the car and drive across the Golden Gate Bridge home. And I remember one time waking up in the morning and I didn't remember how I got home. So I walked outside and, you know, went down around to see where the car was at, and there was no dents in the car. And then I saw this cone stuck under the car, and it was one of those cones that they have in the middle of the Golden Gate Bridge that divide the lanes. So apparently I had a little trouble navigating the Golden Gate. You know, I was always concerned, and my concern for what the neighbors thought went on into my, even into my drinking. You know, I always had everything to look good for my neighbors, and of course they'd see me come home at odd hours in the morning with puke all over myself, and, you know, nice suit on, you know, covered with puke, and I'm sure that I looked very, very glamorous to them. You know, drinking was really glamorous to me. And it took me to a lot of fun places. You know, the Mission District in San Francisco. Wandering around there at, you know, 2 in the morning without knowing where I was at, trying to find my car. So it's amazing that I can stand here today and tell you about some of these experiences, because I really should be dead. After high school, when I went to college, I decided that I wanted to be a funeral director. So I went to school for that. There is actually a school for that. And wasn't a large class, as I'm sure you can imagine. So we were all pretty close, and everybody was drinkers. We just all drank. Our class, I think to this day, still has a reputation at the school. We caused more problems and did more things in that school than I think have happened in the last 10 years there. I went to work for the Marin County Coroner's Office, and that kind of helped feed my disease, because whenever we went out on a accident scene or into a home, into a call that we were involved in, we had to seize any medication that was there. And I made sure that I tested each and every Valium myself to make sure that it was real. You know, those never made it back to the office. You know, I drank about a fifth of Jack Daniels a day, and then I'd take a few Valium to help me get to sleep at night. And there was many mornings when I woke up. I lived in a two-story house in San Rafael, and it was on a hill, and the garage was underneath, and I drove this great big Cadillac. And I knew when I was drinking, you know, if I'd been out drinking, and I couldn't park the car in the garage, because it was a real narrow garage, and I had trouble getting it in, and I took the wall out one time. So I kind of learned my lesson that I should just park out on the street and not even try and get into the garage. And there was many mornings when I woke up and I was asleep on the steps. You know, I would go up the steps to my, it was a true story, so when I'd go up the stairs to my bedroom, I guess I'd trip and fall and just sleep there all night. I wake up still dressed, laying on the steps, you know, cramps, you know, can't move my arm. And I didn't think that there was anything unusual about it because everybody that I hung around with drank like I did or worse. You know, I made sure that I didn't chum around with anybody that didn't drink at least as much as I did, because I thought they were abnormal. And my life was just like that. We talk about a drinking career here, and it really was because I put a lot of work into drinking. You know, I made sure that my schedule revolved around my drinking, and there was things I wouldn't do because I knew there wouldn't be alcohol present, or I knew the people that were going to be there didn't drink, so I wouldn't do any of those things. It wasn't fun to me. And the place that I worked, after I left the coroner's office, I went to work for a funeral home in San Rafael. And I worked with a gentleman that was a drug dealer. And so on every Thursday, he was a Mexican fella. And so every Thursday, we called it Taco Thursday, he'd bring just bags of cocaine, and we'd do cocaine all day long and try and function. And Tony and I always volunteered to do the parking lot detail during a service or something to park cars, because our parking lot was right in front of a garage. And so we'd go in the garage and we'd put out lines on the hood of the hearse and chop them up and snort lines off the hood of the hearse in the garage. And my life just continued like that. And I got a series of DUIs. And fortunately for me, my employer, his nephew was the undersheriff in Marin County. So I got out of several of them, and you know, a couple of them went real light and easy on me. And he suggested to me that I might have a problem with alcohol, and I couldn't imagine why. And he had a friend that was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he wanted me to give her a call and just talk with her. So I called this lady, and that was about 1986. I called this lady, and we agreed to meet, and I don't know why. It was truly God, because I really didn't want to go. And the day that I agreed to meet with her was Taco Thursday. So I had agreed to meet with her at the Zim's in San Rafael at about 7 o'clock that evening. And she was going to explain what happened in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that really scared me, because I didn't know that much about Alcoholics Anonymous, other than things I'd seen on TVs, like from old movies and things. And I thought alcoholics were all a bunch of brown bag type winos that, you know, sat on the curb and sat in doorways and drank. And I saw a lot of that in San Francisco. And that, to me, is what an alcoholic was. What I found later in recovery was that I was that same person. I just had on a suit. So I agreed to meet Ducky, and she explained Alcoholics Anonymous to me. And I don't remember a lot about it, other than she had all those pamphlets, you know, the 20 questions and this and that, and is AA right for you, and all of this stuff. And as she would hand them to me, it's like her arms were 40 feet long, you know. And she's this little tiny lady, and she just seemed bigger than life to me. And she told me her story, and her story was that she had two glasses of wine every day, and so she had to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, two glasses of wine, you know, that's not a problem. But, you know, I later learned that her life revolved around those two glasses of wine. She'd lie to her husband about it and tell him that she hadn't drank it. So, you know, she was an alcoholic. And she asked me to go to a meeting with her, and so we had agreed about a week later to go to a meeting. And the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I ever went to was a step study. And I don't even remember what step it was. I remember very little about the meeting, other than it was at the Alano Club, San Rafael. And we walked in, and there was a sofa, and, you know, it was just a kind of a typical old meeting place, you know, smoke-filled. And the sofa had a sign on it that says, "Please don't sit on this sofa. We think it has scabies." And I thought, what has my life been reduced to, you know? Church basements, folding chairs, and coffee urns ad infinitum. And, you know, I think a step study is probably not a good meeting to go to for your first time. I didn't hear a lot. But I did continue for about 3 months to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you people told me that you had this big secret. And that secret was that I never had to drink again if I just did a couple of things. And those things were, you know, get a big book and read it, get a sponsor and call him, and work the steps. So I got a big book and I didn't read it. I didn't get a sponsor, and I never worked the steps. So I went back out and, you know, experimented for several more years. And finally what brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous was another DUI about a half a block from my house. And it was the same officer that had given me a previous one. And I remember him telling me in the car that I wasn't alone and that there was people that could help. And, you know, when I look back on it now, he had to be a member of the program. So what happened is I had to do quite a bit of jail time for this, which is really quite embarrassing. And it was even worse because the judge that sentenced me, I had been in the Kiwanis Club with, and I think he decided to make an example out of me and pretty much gave me the maximum of everything. And, you know, standing there, I'd been sitting in court all day, and, you know, people were getting up there, and, you know, they would read the police officer's report of what happened, and, you know, suspect was observed swerving and given a breathalyzer test, and it was, you know, 0.11, 0.15. So they did the same thing for me. Suspect was observed swerving and driving erratically, and blood alcohol level was 0.34. And everyone in the court laughed. And I remember that made me feel about 6 inches tall, and I knew that it was something very, very serious. So I went into the Marin County Jail at the old Blue Roof Hotel, which is right off of Highway 101. You can see it from the freeway. And I was going to spend the next about the next 10 months of my life there. And I, out of pure boredom, while I was in jail, I started going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started listening to what was being said. And I realized that these were people that were, I'm very grateful to H&I because it was H&I that brought these meetings in. And it was normal people. You know, we had a priest come and give his share. And, you know, there was a lawyer and a doctor and, you know, civil engineer, those kind of people. And I started to realize that alcohol affected everybody. And then I started listening to what people in jail were saying. You know, they said, "When I get out of here, the first thing I'm going to do is get a six-pack, you know, and screw my girlfriend." And, you know, I started realizing that the six-pack is what got them there, so I didn't want to do that, and the second was obvious. So I heard what they said, and I heard what was being said in the meetings, and I found out that I could get into a recovery program, and the truth of it is I paroled out. I never thought of using that word before, but I went into this residential recovery program in San Francisco. It was the Henry Olaf House. And you have to live there for 6 months with about 52 other drunks and very tight quarters, and you have to work, and you have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and you have to go to these group meetings. And kind of the irony of it was, when I worked in San Francisco for quite a while, and we used to drive by this big house, this big, beautiful Victorian house, and I used to think, gosh, that's, I'd like to live in that house someday. Well, I got to. That was the Henry Olaf house. You know, when I arrived there, I showed up in my Cadillac with my Louis Vuitton luggage that some queen from Charleston, South Carolina stole from me while I was there. I'm still really bitter about that. I've gotten over everything else but the Louis Vuitton luggage. And, you know, I walked up to the front door and this hateful old queen named Skip, who was the director of the place, and who I later became very, very dear friends with. He kind of gave me the rundown of what went on and fill this out and sign this and do this. And so I informed him that my bags were here and someone could take them up to my room. And he looked at me, and I'll never forget, he said, "Darling," he says, "you take off your fucking tiara." He says, "you get those bags." He says, "you get them up to your room." And then he says, "then you get back down here and you get dinner by 6 o'clock with a jacket and a tie on." He says, "or you're back where you came from." And, you know, who was he to talk to me like that? So what happened was I really kind of got into this place. You know, we had these group meetings 3 nights a week where we had about 10 people there in a group. And what we do is we had to sit in this group and talk about ourselves. And at first I really didn't want to do it. And so the group wanted to kick me out because I'd never talked about anything, and they said that it was kind of a power, you know, it was a power play for me. You know, I knew everything about them and they didn't know anything about me. So I started talking, and I think they were sorry because I didn't shut up for the next 4 months. And I learned a lot about myself, and we started going to meetings outside, and you know, I started meeting people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a home group, and I got a sponsor, and my sponsor kind of just walked up to me at a meeting and said, "I think you need a sponsor, and I'll sponsor you temporarily if you want." And he was my sponsor for quite a while, and he was the typical, you know, old-timer. He was a Nazi, you know, he did it his way, which was what was taught to him, and his way was what is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we worked on the first, second, and third step, then we got to the fourth step, and he told me that I had about 3 weeks to do the fourth step. And so about the 20th day, I decided I better sit down and do the searching and fearless moral inventory of myself, because I had a meeting with him the next day, and I had to have this done. So I scribbled some shit out on a paper and gave it to him, and he looked at it and tore it up. And he said, "Go back and do a fourth step." And he said, "this time you have 1 week to do it." He said, "or you can find another sponsor." So I did it. And it was probably one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do in my life, because I had to look inside of myself, and I had to put these things down that I was taught, you know, I should never talk about, because the neighbors might think something's not right. So I put all of these things down, and then we did the fifth step, and then we just moved on through the steps from there. And I was very fortunate, because I went to a group in San Francisco that met at 1010 Valencia Street, and it was gutter drunks, and you know, it was old hardcore Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the first contact that I had there was this old guy. He had like 30 some years. I remember his name was Joe V. And you know, he always had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and there was this yellow streak up his face and through his hair from the smoke, and you know, he told me that if I was there for the coffee, to just get a cup and leave. To free up the chair for somebody that really wanted to be there. And I was told, you know, to take the cotton out of my ears and shove it in my mouth. I was told that nobody wanted to hear anything that I had to say until I had at least 3 years. To just sit there, shut up, listen, and find out how to stay sober. So it was pretty hardcore Alcoholics Anonymous. And what these people would do, I didn't realize that these people loved me unconditionally. What they would do is, you know, we'd have a meeting, and after the meeting, you were going to coffee with them. And then they'd get you in these booths, and they would put you on the inside, and they'd sit on the outside so you couldn't leave. And so then I'd sit there and, you know, vibrate from caffeine, and these people loved me, and they loved me for who I was, they taught me how to live sober, and they taught me that my life was going to get better, and that things were going to change. And, you know, to this day, nobody has ever lied to me about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything that people that have been here longer than I have and have been around and done what's suggested, everything they've told me has come true in my life. And last night somebody read the promises, and he said that that's what kept him coming back. And that was one of the things that kept me coming back, was the promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. And every one of those promises has come true in my life, and it has come true more than one time. You know, it's just, I have been blessed so much in this program. And before the meeting started today, somebody came up to me and wanted my phone number, and told me that she was a partner of somebody I took her to her first meeting, one of her first meetings. And it was about 8 years ago, and she's still sober. And that warms my heart so much, because she was, I picked her and a few women up out of Alpha Oaks Recovery House and took them to a meeting. I used to do that every week. And she scared me. You know, she was this big dyke that was sitting in the back seat of my car telling me how she wanted to beat the crap out of all these women at Alpha Oaks. You know, so I just sat there and, you know, I was wrong. You know, it's okay, we'll be there real quick. You want me to stop anywhere on the way? And I got to watch her change, and I got to watch her grow, and so when I hear she's still sober and she's still an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, it just warms my heart, because this program does work. I've had so many spiritual things happen to me in this program. And, you know, the 11th step says that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we always talk about the spiritual awakening in the program. And people, well, when am I going to have the spiritual awakening? Well, step 11 tells you when you do the steps, you'll have the spiritual awakening. You know, I've always liked to think that the steps are suggestions of what we should do. We don't have to do them. You know, I've known a lot of people that have come in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they didn't ever get the steps, and they had really good sobriety up until the time they went out and drank. And, you know, the steps are suggestions, and it's the same as jumping. I've been skydiving, and it's the same as jumping out of an airplane. It's only suggested that you pull the cord. You know, you don't have to, but if you want to live, you'll pull the cord so that the parachute opens. You know, and that's the way I've always felt about the steps. I don't have to do them, but if I want to live, I will. And I've always thought that the big book is blue because blueprints are blue. And the big book is a blueprint for the alcoholic, for the alcoholic's life. It's a blueprint of how we should live. And when I first came here, it all seemed kind of goody-goody, and these people can't be serious about this. But we are, and it's for us, it's a matter of life and death. I've had the joy to sponsor a lot of people, and Some of them have gone out, and of course, when I was fairly new, I took that extremely personal. And now I really I don't. I had a sponsee not too long ago call me and ask me why I hadn't called them. I don't call sponsees. You know, if they want sobriety, they can call me. And he hadn't called me around, and he called and wanted to know why I hadn't called. And the only thing that came to my mind was, well, I told him, I said, when you have what I want, I'll call you. he got really upset with me. But he called back the next day. Sponsoring people, I've always sponsored people. It's something that keeps me coming to the program. I got a real big resentment, I don't know, a year or so ago, 2 years ago, against my home group and some people in it. And I thought, well, I'm not going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. People would call me, and, you know, it was a lot of work to keep this resentment going. And people would call and ask me if I wanted to go to a meeting, and I'd say no, because if I did that, I'd probably lose my resentment. And I think I'll just stay at home tonight and work on that a little bit more. And then, magically, one day I was in the car going to a meeting, and I didn't even realize that that's what I was doing. God will do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. God put me in my car, and God headed me, pointed my car to the meeting, because that's where I needed to be. And, you know, that resentment magically went away. And I started getting involved again, and there was a lot of issues that I had to work on that I found out from another program. And, you know, drugs were a part of my story. And I had to go to another program to work on that. And that's okay. I had to go and address those issues with people that understood that. You know, alcohol is a drug, but the two programs are a lot different. Since I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been very blessed to have been relieved of the compulsion to drink. I've never really had the strong urge to go out and drink again. You know, I did plenty of that while I was out there, and I know where it took me. And I had all these old timers telling me that if I did it again, I'd die. And so I was very fortunate from the beginning that the compulsion to drink was taken away. However, the compulsion sometimes to do other things was still there, and so I had to address those issues. And fortunately for me, by doing that, it got me back into Alcoholics Anonymous, because this is what is really home for me. I feel comfortable around drunks. I like drunks, whether they're drinking or whether they're sober. I just like drunks. I'm one of them. So sobriety has been a real journey for me. And Susie, when Susie was giving me that gracious introduction, she was talking about a spiritual experience that we had with a friend this last year, and it was actually a sponsee of mine who got sober and stayed sober and became a very active part of Alcoholics Anonymous in Sacramento. And I'll digress a little bit. I had a sponsor when I moved from San Francisco back up here to Sacramento. I had a sponsor who, at 8 years, 9 years sober, died of cirrhosis of the liver. Alcohol guilt can get us even after we're sober, and that was a really, really hard thing for me to go through. And then I had a sponsee who, at 6 years sober, died of cirrhosis of the liver. And I'm looking for sponsees. All of my sponsees seem to die on me. But it just brings home that how powerful this disease is. That even after we're sober for 6, 9 years, it can still get us. And it can get us even when we're not drinking. And I think the most, you know, the spiritual experience that we had with it was that, well, for one, he died sober and he died with dignity. And he died surrounded by about 12 members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said that he had seen God a couple of days before he died, and that he had, there was such a peace about him, and something that he said to me, he said, God has always told me that you love me. And he says, I don't think I believed it until I talked with God today. And he was crying, and he said, I'm not crying because I'm sad. He said, I'm crying because I'm happy, and I'm crying because I know everything's going to be all right. And he said, I'm crying because I know I'm going to get to go home. And we thought that we were going to get him back to the Midwest. And I think he knew when he made that statement what he was talking about. He was going to get to go home to his higher power. And it was really one of the most incredible experiences that I've ever had in this program, was to see somebody face death, somebody that had worked the steps several times, somebody that practiced these principles in all their affairs. He got to die with dignity, and he got to die with his family of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what we are. We're all family. You know, we come here a lot of our families have disowned us and don't love us or don't like us anymore. And we find that here in these rooms, and we bond. And you know, there's people, I see people in this room that were here when I first came to Sacramento and came to the program, and I'm so happy to see them still here. And you know, one of the people that was very instrumental in my sobriety when I first came to Sacramento was Grady, and I saw her here last night, and Friday night, and that made me feel so good. You know, Grady always told me the truth, and she used to piss me off because she'd tell me the truth, and she wouldn't tell me in a nice way. You know, to this day, I love her for that, telling me just exactly the way it was going to be, because that's what we need to know. We don't need someone co-signing us and calling us along in this, because this is a disease that will kill us unless we take the necessary steps to prevent it. My whole program is based on God, on my higher power. My program is, for me, is very spiritual. I know that none of this I could have done by myself, because I know what my thought process gets me. It gets me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so every morning when I get up, I have to pray, and I have to do step 1, 2, and 3. And every night when I go to bed, I have to do step 10. Or before I go to bed, I have to do step 10. And I have to make sure that my side of the street is clean. And, you know, Mary last night, our speaker last night, was talking about how she didn't hear a lot of the things anymore that used to go on in Alcoholics Anonymous, and about how people not doing a 10th step on a daily basis. And you know, there's been so many times when that 10th step has at night has helped me realize what I've done wrong during the day, and it's helped me call that person that I might have wronged the next day and apologize and make amends for my actions the day before. And the only way that I can continue to stay sober is to continue to do the steps on a daily basis and practice the principles in all of my affairs. Sobriety is an incredible journey. It gets better, and it gets worse, and then it gets better, and then it gets worse and worse, and it kind of evens out, and it's better. And you know, it never tells us anywhere that we're going to get well. It just tells us that we're going to get better, and we're going to learn how to live on life's terms. I was a little nervous this morning because I knew that this was the spiritual meeting, and I was feeling very unspiritual on the way over here. You know, I had to pull the car over and just stop and start my day over again for a couple of minutes. You know, people weren't driving as the way I thought they should on a Sunday morning. I can't believe there's so many assholes out on a Sunday morning. And you know, when I went to the had to stop at the bank, and I couldn't get my ATM card to work, and that just kind of, you know, I just finally I pulled over and started the day over again. And now I'm feeling very spiritual. You know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has brought me back to my Catholic faith. You know, that's what works for me. If it doesn't, you know, whatever works for you as a you know, higher power and spirituality, use it. You know, for me, my Catholic faith works. In the last year, I've taken on a position works, and it kind of, I work with a group of about 10 little old ladies, and we meet every Wednesday for choir practice, and they sing for Mass every Sunday, and we have a ball. And, you know, I owe all of it to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I'm present for my life so I can be present for others. You know, and I've people love me here, and it's taught me to love myself, to love my God, and in turn to love everybody back. And there isn't anything I wouldn't do with somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I may not even like the person, but if they're having a, if they're going to drink, you know, I'll do whatever I can to help them. You know, some people are assholes before they're sober, and they remain assholes after they're sober. And we don't have to like everybody here, but my responsibility as an alcoholic, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, is to do what I can to help them stay sober. And I take that very seriously, because that's the only reason I can stand up here today and talk to you. I hope that everybody's enjoyed the conference this weekend. I've heard some really good things, and I appreciate everybody sharing your sobriety with me. Thank you.